test. Nayla does not question my tests. She treats them as flea bites. Her lord commands, Nayla obeys. I must not let anything change that relationship. She would have made a superb shadow in the old days, Leto thought. It was one of the reasons he had given Nayla a kris knife, a real one preserved from Siege Tabor. It had belonged to one of Stilgar's wives. Nayla wore it in a concealed sheath beneath her robes, more a talisman than a weapon. He had given it to her in the original ritual, a ceremony which had surprised him by evoking emotions he had thought forever buried. "This is the tooth of Shai Hulud." He had extended the blade to her on his silvery-skinned hands. "Take it, and you become part of both past and future. Soil it, and the past will give you no future." Nayla had accepted the blade, then the sheath. "Draw the blood of a finger," Leto had commanded. Nayla had obeyed. "Sheath the blade. Never remove it without drawing blood." Again, Nayla had obeyed. As Leto watched the three-dimensional image of Nayla's approach, his reflections on that old ceremony were touched by sadness. Unless fixed in the old Fremen way, the blade would grow increasingly brittle and useless. It would keep its kris knife shape throughout Nayla's life, but little longer. "I have thrown away a bit of the past." How sad it was that the Shaddart of old had become today's fish speaker, and a true kris knife had been used to bind a servant more strongly to her master. He knew that some thought his fish speakers were really priestesses. Leto's answer to the Bene Gesserit. "He creates another religion," the Bene Gesserit said. "Nonsense, I have not created a religion. I am the religion." Nayla entered the Tower Sanctuary and stood 3 paces from Leto's cart, her gaze lowered in proper subservience. Still in his memories, Leto said, "Look at me, woman." She obeyed. "I have created a holy obscenity," he said. "This religion built around my person disgusts me."
"Yes, Lord."
Nayla's green eyes on the gilded cushions of her cheeks stared out at him without questioning, without comprehension, without the need of either response. "If I sent her out to collect the stars, she would go and she would attempt it. She thinks I am testing her again. I do believe she could anger me."
"This damnable religion should end with me," Leto shouted. "Why should I want to loose a religion upon my people? Religions wreck from within, empires and individuals alike, it's all the same."
"Yes, Lord."
"Religions create radicals and fanatics like you."
"Thank you, Lord."
The short-lived pseudo-rage sank back out of sight into the depths of his memories. Nothing dented the hard surface of Nayla's faith.
"Topri has reported to me through Moneo," Leto said. "Tell me about this Topri."
"Topri is a worm."
"Isn't that what you call me when you're among the rebels?"
"I obey my lord in everything."
"Touché."
"Topri is not worth cultivating then?" Leto asked.
"Siona assessed him correctly. He is clumsy. He says things which others will repeat, thus exposing his hand in the matter." Within seconds after Kobat began to speak, she had confirmation that Topri was a spy.
"Everyone agrees, even Moneo," Leto thought. "Topri is not a good spy."
The agreement amused Leto. The petty machinations muddied water which remained completely transparent to him. The performers, however, still suited his designs.
"Siona does not suspect you?" Leto asked.
"I am not clumsy."
"Do you know why I summoned you?"
"To test my faith." "Ah, Nayla, how little you know of testing."
"I want your assessment of Siona. I want to see it on your face and see it in your movements and hear it in your voice," Leto said. "Is she ready?"
"The fish speakers need that one, Lord. Why do you risk losing her?"
"Forcing the issue is the surest way of losing what I treasure most in her," Leto said.
She must come to me with all of her strengths intact.
Nayla lowered her gaze.
As my lord commands.
Leto recognized the response. It was a Nayla reaction to whatever she failed to understand.
Will she survive the test, Nayla?
As my lord describes the test.
Nayla lifted her gaze to Leto's face, shrugged.
I do not know, lord. Certainly she is strong. She was the only one to survive the wolves. But she is ruled by hate.
Quite naturally. Tell me, Nayla, what will she do with the things she stole from me?
Did Topri not inform you about the books which they say contain your sacred words?
Odd how she can capitalize words only with her voice,
Leto thought. He spoke curtly.
Yes, yes, the Ixions have a copy and soon the Guild and Sisterhood as well will be hard at work on them.
What are those books, lord?
They are my words for my people. I want them to be read. What I want to know is what Siona has said about the citadel charts she took.
She says there is a great horde of melange beneath your citadel, lord, and the charts will reveal it.
The charts will not reveal it. Will she tunnel?
She seeks Ixion tools for that.
Ix will not provide them.
Is there such a horde of spice, lord?
Yes.
There is a story about how your horde is defended, lord. That Arrakis itself would be destroyed if anyone tried to steal your melange. Is it true?
Yes. And that would shatter the Empire. Nothing would survive. Not Guild or Sisterhood, not Ix or Tlelaxu, not even the Fish Speakers.
She shuddered. Then,
I will not let Siona try to get your spice.
Nayla! I commanded you to obey Siona in everything. Is this how you serve me?
Lord?
She stood in fear of his anger, closer to a loss of faith than he had ever seen her. It was the crisis he had created, knowing how it must end. Slowly, Nayla relaxed. He could see the shape of her thought as though she had laid it out for him in illuminated words. The ultimate test.
You will return to Siona and guard her life with your own,
Leto said.
That is the task I set for you and that you accepted. It is why you were chosen. It is why you carry a blade from Stilgar's household.
Her right hand went to the kris knife concealed beneath her robe.
How sure it is,
Leto thought, that a weapon can lock a person into a predictable pattern of behavior. He stared with fascination at Nayla's rigid body. Her eyes were empty of everything except adoration.
The ultimate rhetorical despotism. And I despise it. Go then, he barked.
Nayla turned and fled the holy presence.
Is it worth this?
Leto wondered. But Nayla had told him what he needed to know. Nayla had renewed her faith, and revealed with accuracy the thing which Leto could not find in Siona's fading image. Nayla's instincts were to be trusted.
Siona has reached that explosive moment which I require.
The Duncans always think it odd that I choose women for combat forces, but my fish speakers are a temporary army in every sense. While they can be violent and vicious, women are profoundly different from men in their dedication to battle. The cradle of Genesis ultimately predisposes them to behavior more protective of life. They have proved to be the best keepers of the Golden Path. I reinforce this in my design for their training. They are set aside for a time from ordinary routines. I give them special sharings which they can look back upon with pleasure for the rest of their lives. They come of age in the company of their sisters in preparation for events more profound. What you share in such companionship always prepares you for greater things. The haze of nostalgia covers their days among their sisters, making those days into something different than they were. That's the way today changes history. All contemporaries do not inhabit the same time. The past is always changing, but few realize it. The Stolen Journals.
After sending word to the fish speakers, Leto descended to the crypt in the late evening. He found it best to begin the first interview with a new Duncan Idaho in a darkened room, where the Goler could hear Leto describe himself before actually seeing the pre-worm body. There was a small side room carved in black stone off the central rotunda of the crypt which suited this requirement. The chamber was large enough to accommodate Leto on his cart, but the ceiling was low. Illumination came from hidden glow globes which he controlled. There was only the one door, but it was in two segments, one swinging wide to admit the royal cart, the other a small portal in human dimensions. Leto rolled his royal cart into the chamber, sealed the large portal, and opened the smaller one. He composed himself then for the ordeal. Boredom was an increasing problem. The pattern of the Tleilaxu Golas had become boringly repetitious. Once Leto had sent word warning the Tleilaxu to send no more Duncans, but they had known they could disobey him in this thing.
"Sometimes I think they do it just to keep disobedience alive."
The Tleilaxu relied on an important thing which they knew protected them in other matters.
"The presence of a Duncan pleases the Paul Atreides in me."
As Leto had explained it to Moneo in the Majordomo's first days at the Citadel,
"The Duncans must come to me with much more than Tleilaxu preparation. You must see to it that my Huris gentle the Duncans and that the women answer some of his questions."
"Which questions may they answer, Lord?"
"They know."
Moneo had, of course, learned all about this procedure over the years. Leto heard Moneo's voice outside the darkened room, then the sound of the fish speaker escort, and the hesitantly distinctive footsteps of the new Gola.
"Through that door," Moneo said. "It will be dark inside, and we will close the door behind you. Stop just inside and wait for the Lord Leto to speak."
"Why will it be dark?"
The Duncan's voice was full of aggressive misgivings.
"He will explain."
Duncan was thrust into the room and the door was sealed behind him. Leto knew what the Gola saw. Only shadows among shadows, and blackness where not even the source of a voice could be fixed. As usual, Leto brought the Paul Muad'Dib voice into play.
"It pleases me to see you again, Duncan."
"I can't see you."
Idaho was a warrior, and the warrior attacks. This reassured Leto that the Gola was a fully restored original. The morality play by which the Tleilaxu reawakened a Gola's pre-death memories always left some uncertainties in the Gola's minds. Some of the Duncans believed they had threatened a real Paul Muad'Dib. This one carried such illusions.
"I hear Paul's voice, but I can't see him," Idaho said.
He didn't try to conceal the frustrations, let them all come out in his voice.
"Why was an Atreides playing this stupid game?
Paul was truly dead in some long ago, and this was Leto, the carrier of Paul's resurrected memories, and the memories of many others, if the Tleilaxu stories were to be believed."
"You have been told that you are only the latest in a long line of duplicates," Leto said.
"I have none of those memories."
Leto recognized hysteria in the Duncan, barely covered by the warrior bravado. The cursed Tleilaxu post-tank restoration tactics had reduced the usual mental chaos. This Duncan had arrived in a state of near shock, strongly suspecting he was insane. Leto knew that the most subtle powers of reassurance would be required now to soothe the poor fellow. This would be emotionally draining for both of them.
"There have been many changes, Duncan," Leto said. "One thing, though, does not change. I am still Atreides."
"They say your body is—"
"Yes, that has changed."
"The damned Tleilaxu. They tried to make me kill someone. Well, he looked like you. I suddenly remembered who I was, and there was this—" "Could that have been a Muad'Dib Gola?"
"A face dancer mimic, I assure you."
"He looked and talked so much like—" Are you sure?
An actor, no more. Did he survive?
Of course. That's how they wakened my memories. They explained the whole damned thing.
Is it true? It's true, Duncan. I detest it, but I permit it for the pleasure of your company. The potential victims always survive, Plato thought. At least for the Duncans I see. There have been slips. The fake Paul slain and the Duncans wasted. But there are always more cells carefully preserved from the original.
What about your body? Idaho demanded.
Muad'Dib could be retired now. Later resumed his usual voice. I accepted the sand trout as my skin. They have been changing me ever since.
Why?
I will explain that in due course.
The Tleilaxu said you look like a sandworm.
What did my fish speakers say?
They said you're God.
Why do you call them fish speakers? An odd conceit. The first priestesses spoke to fish in their dreams. They learned valuable things that way.
How do you know?
I am those women, and everything that came before and after them.
Leto heard the dry swallowing in Idaho's throat, then,
I see why the darkness.
You're giving me time to adjust. You always were quick, Duncan. Except when you were slow.
How long have you been changing?
More than 3,500 years.
Then what the Tleilaxu told me is true.
They seldom dare to lie any more.
That's a long time.
Very long.
The Tleilaxu have copied me many times?
Many. It's time you asked how many, Duncan.
How many of me?
I will let you see the records for yourself. And so it starts, Leto thought.
This exchange always appeared to satisfy the Duncans, but there was no escaping the nature of the question, how many of me? The Duncans made no distinctions of the flesh, even though no mutual memories passed between Golas of the same stock.
I remember my death, Idaho said. Harkonnen blades. Lots of them trying to get at you and Jessica.
Leto restored the Muad'Dib voice for momentary play.
I was there, Duncan.
I'm a replacement, is that right?
Idaho asked.
That's right, Leto said.
How did the other... me? I mean, how did he die?
All flesh wears out, Duncan. It's in the records.
Leto waited patiently, wondering how long it would be until the tamed history failed to satisfy this Duncan.
What do you really look like?
Idaho asked.
What's this sandworm body that Tleilaxu described?
It will make sandworms of sorts some day. It's already far down the road of metamorphosis.
What do you mean of sorts?
It will have more ganglia. It will be aware.
Can't we have some light? I'd like to see you.
Leto commanded the floodlights. Brilliant illumination filled the room. The black walls and the lighting had been arranged to focus the illumination on Leto, every visible detail revealed. Idaho swept his gaze along the faceted, silvery-grey body, noted the beginnings of a sandworm's ribbed sections, the sinuous flexings, the small protuberances which had once been feet and legs, one of them somewhat shorter than the other. He brought his attention back to the well-defined arms and hands, and finally lifted his attention to the cowled face, with its pink skin almost lost in the immensity, a ridiculous extrusion on such a body.
Well, Duncan, Leto said, you were warned.
Idaho gestured mutely toward the pre-worm body. Leto asked it for him.
Why?
Idaho nodded.
I'm still Atreides, Duncan, and I assure you with all the honor of that name there were compelling reasons.
What could possibly...
You will learn in time.
Idaho merely shook his head from side to side.
It's not a pleasant revelation, Leto said. It requires that you learn other things first. Trust the word of an Atreides.
Over the centuries, Leto had found that this invocation of Idaho's profound loyalties to all things Atreides dampened the immediate wellspring of personal questions. Once more the formula worked. So I'm to serve the Atreides again, Idaho said. That sounds familiar.
Is it?
In many ways, old friend.
Old to you, maybe, but not to me. How will I serve?
Didn't my fish speakers tell you?
They said I would command your elite guard, a force chosen from among them. I don't understand that. An army of women?
I need a trusted companion who can command my guard. You object?
Why women?
There are behavioral differences between the sexes which make women extremely valuable in this role.
You're not answering my question.
You think them inadequate?
Some of them looked pretty tough, but
others were, soft with you?
Idaho blushed. Leto found this a charming reaction. The Duncans were among the few humans of these times who could do this. It was understandable, a product of the Duncans' early training, their sense of personal honor, very chivalrous. I don't see why you trust women to protect you, Idaho said. The blood slowly receded from his cheeks. He glared at Leto.
But I have always trusted them as I trust you, with my life.
What do we protect you from?
Moneo and my fish speakers will bring you up to date.
Idaho shifted from one foot to the other, his body swaying in a heartbeat rhythm. He stared around the small room, his eyes not focusing. With the abruptness of sudden decision, he returned his attention to Leto. What do I call you? It was the sign of acceptance for which Leto had been waiting.
Will Lord Leto do?
Yes, my lord. Idaho stared directly into Leto's Fremen blue eyes. Is it true what your fish speakers say? You have memories of...
We're all here, Duncan.
Leto spoke it in the voice of his paternal grandfather. Then,
even the women are here, Duncan.
It was the voice of Jessica, Leto's paternal grandmother.
You knew them well, Leto said. And they know you.
Idaho inhaled a slow, trembling breath.
That will take a little getting used to.
My own initial reaction exactly, Leto said.
An explosion of laughter shook Idaho, and Leto thought it more than the weak jest deserved. But he remained silent. Presently, Idaho said,
Your fish speakers were supposed to put me in a good mood, weren't they?
Did they succeed?
Idaho studied Leto's face, recognizing the distinctive Atreides features.
You Atreides always did know me too well,
Idaho said.
That's better,
Leto said.
You're beginning to accept that I'm not just one Atreides. I'm all of them.
Paul said that once.
So I did.
As much as the original personality could be conveyed by tone and accent, it was Muad'Dib speaking. Idaho gulped, looked away at the room's door.
You've taken something away from us, he said. I can feel it. Those women. Moneo.
Us against you, Leto thought. The Duncans always choose the human side.
Idaho returned his attention to Leto's face.
What have you given us in exchange?
Throughout the Empire, Leto's peace.
And I can see that everyone's delightfully happy. That's why you need a personal guard.
Leto smiled.
My peace is actually enforced tranquility. Humans have a long history of reacting against tranquility.
So you give us the fish speakers.
And a hierarchy you can identify without any mistakes.
A female army, Idaho muttered.
The ultimate male enticing force, Leto said. Sex always was a way of subduing the aggressive male.
Is that what they do?
They prevent or ameliorate excesses which could lead to more painful violence.
And you let them believe you're a god? I don't think I like this.
The curse of holiness is as offensive to me as it is to you.
Idaho frowned. It was not the response he had expected.
What kind of game are you playing, Lord Leto?
A very old one, but with new rules.
Your rules.
Would you rather I turned it all back to Chome and Lanthrat and the great houses?
The Tleilaxu say there is no more Lanthrat. You don't allow any real self-rule.
Well then, I could step aside for the Bene Gesserit, or maybe the Ixians, or the Tleilaxu. Would you like me to find another Baron Harkonnen to assume power over the Empire? Say the word, Duncan, and I'll abdicate.
Under this avalanche of meanings, Idaho again shook his head from side to side.
In the wrong hands, Leto said. Monolithic, centralized power is a dangerous and volatile instrument.
And your hands are the right ones?
I'm not certain about my hands, but I will tell you, Duncan, I'm certain about the hands of those who've gone before me. I know them.
Idaho turned his back on Leto.
What a fascinating, ultimately human gesture, Leto thought. Rejection coupled to acceptance of his vulnerability.
Leto spoke to Idaho's back.
You object quite rightly that I use people without their full knowledge and consent.
Idaho turned his profile to Leto, then turned his head to look up at the cowled face, cocking his head forward a bit to peer into the all-blue eyes.
He is studying me, Leto thought, but he has only the face to measure me by.
The Atreides had taught their people to know the subtle signals of face and body, and Idaho was good at it, but the realization could be seen coming over him. He was beyond his depth here. Idaho cleared his throat.
What's the worst thing you would ask of me?
How like a Duncan, Leto thought. This one was a classic. Idaho would give his loyalty to an Atreides, to the guardian of his oath, but he sent a signal that he would not go beyond the personal limits of his own morality. You will be asked to guard me by whatever means necessary, and you will be asked to guard my secret.
What secret?
That I am vulnerable.
That you're not God?
Not in that ultimate sense.
Your fish speakers talk about rebels.
They exist.
Why?
They are young, and I have not convinced them that my way is better. It's very difficult convincing the young of anything. They are born knowing so much.
I never before heard an Atreides sneer at the young that way.
Perhaps it's because I'm so much older. Old, compounded by old. And my task gets more difficult with each passing generation.
What is your task?
You will come to understand it as we go along.
What happens if I fail you?
Do your women eliminate me? I try not to burden the fish speakers with guilt.
But you would burden me.
If you accept it.
If I find that you're worse than the Harkonnens, I'll turn against you.
How like a Duncan. They measure all evil against the Harkonnens. How little they know of evil.
Leto said,
The Baron ate whole planets, Duncan. What could be worse than that?
Eating the Empire.
I am pregnant with my Empire. I'll die giving birth to it.
If I could believe that.
Will you command my guard?
Why me?
You're the best.
Dangerous work, I'd imagine. Is that how my predecessors died, doing your dangerous work?
Some of them.
I wish I had the memories of those others.
You couldn't have, and still be the original.
I want to learn about them, though.
You will.
So the Atreides still need a sharp knife?
We have jobs that only a Duncan Idaho can do.
You say, we.
Idaho swallowed, looked at the door, then at Leto's face. Leto spoke to him as Muad'Dib would have, but still in the Leto voice.
When we climbed to Sietch Tabor for the last time together, you had my loyalty then, and I had yours. Nothing of that has really changed.
That was your father.
That was me,
Paul Muad'Dib's voice of command coming from Leto's bulk always shocked the Golas. Idaho whispered,
All of you, in that one body.
He broke off. Leto remained silent. This was the decision moment. Presently, Idaho permitted himself that devil-may-care grin for which he had been so well known.
Then I will speak to the first Leto and to Paul, the ones who know me best. Use me well, for I did love you.
Leto closed his eyes. Such words always distressed him. He knew it was love to which he was most vulnerable. Moneo, who had been listening, came to the rescue. He entered and said,
"Lord, shall I take Duncan Idaho to the guards he will command?"
"Yes." The one word was all that Leto could manage. Moneo took Idaho's arm and led him away. "Good Moneo," Leto thought. "So good. He knows me so well. But I despair of his ever understanding me."
"I know the evil of my ancestors because I am those people. The balance is delicate in the extreme. I know that few of you who read my words have ever thought about your ancestors this way. It has not occurred to you that your ancestors were survivors, and that the survival itself sometimes involved savage decisions, a kind of wanton brutality which civilized humankind works very hard to suppress. What price will you pay for that suppression? Will you accept your own extinction?" The Stolen Journals.
As he dressed for his first morning of fish speaker command, Idaho tried to shake off a nightmare. It had awakened him twice, and both times he had gone out on the balcony to stare up at the stars, the dream still roaring in his head.
Women. Weaponless women in black armor. Rushing at him with a hoarse, mindless shouting of a mob. Waving hands moist with red blood. And as they swarmed over him, their mouths opened to display terrible fangs.
In that moment, he awoke. Morning light did little to dispel the effects of the nightmare. They had provided him with a room in the North Tower. The balcony looked out over a vista of dunes to a distant cliff with what appeared to be a mud hut village at its base. Idaho buttoned his tunic as he stared at the scene.
Why does Leto choose only women for his army?
Several comely fish speakers had offered to spend the night with their new commander, but Idaho had rejected them. It was not like the Atreides to use sex as a persuader. He looked down at his clothing, a black uniform with golden piping, a red hawk at the left breast. That at least was familiar. No insignia of rank.
"They know your face,"
Moneo had said.
"Strange little man, Moneo."
This thought brought Idaho up short. Reflection told him that Moneo was not little.
"Very controlled, yes, but no shorter than I am."
Moneo appeared drawn into himself, though. Collected. Idaho glanced around his room, sybaritic in its attention to comfort. Soft cushions, appliances concealed behind panels of brown polished wood. The bath was an ornate display of pastel blue tiles, with a combination bath and shower in which at least six people could bathe at the same time. The whole place invited self-indulgence. These were quarters where you could let your senses indulge in remembered pleasures.
"Clever,"
Idaho whispered. A gentle tapping on his door was followed by a female voice saying,
"Commander, Moneo is here."
Idaho glanced out at the sunburnt colors of the distant cliff.
"Commander,"
the voice was a bit louder.
"Come in,"
Idaho called. Moneo entered, closing the door behind him. He wore tunic and trousers of chalk white, which forced the eyes to concentrate on his face. Moneo glanced once around the room.
"So this is where they put you, those damned women. I suppose they thought they were being kind, but they ought to know better."
"How do you know what I like?"
Idaho demanded. Even as he asked it, he realized it was a foolish question.
"I'm not the first Duncan Idaho that Moneo has seen."
Moneo merely smiled and shrugged.
"I did not mean to offend you, Commander. Will you keep these quarters, then?"
"I like the view."
"But not the furnishings."
It was a statement.
"Those can be changed," Idaho said.
"I will see to it."
"I suppose you're here to explain my duties."
"As much as I can. I know how strange everything must appear to you at first. This civilization is profoundly different from the one you knew."
"I can see that.
How did my predecessor die?" Moneo shrugged. It appeared to be his standard gesture, but there was nothing self-effacing about it.
He was not fast enough to escape the consequences of a decision he had made,
Moneo said. Be specific. Moneo sighed. The Duncans were always like this, so demanding.
The rebellion killed him. Do you wish the details?
Would they be useful to me?
No.
I want a complete briefing on this rebellion today. But first, why are there no men in Leto's army?
He has you.
You know what I mean.
He has a curious theory about armies. I have discussed it with him on many occasions. But do you not want to breakfast before I explain?
Can't we have both at the same time? Moneo turned toward the door and called out a single word.
Now.
The effect was immediate and fascinating to Idaho. A troop of young fish speakers swarmed into the room. Two of them took a folding table and chairs from behind a panel and placed them on the balcony. Others set the table for two people. More brought food, fresh fruit, hot rolls, and a steaming drink which smelled faintly of spice and caffeine. It was all done with a swift and silent efficiency which spoke of long practice. They left as they had come, without a word. Idaho found himself seated across from Moneo at the table within a minute after the start of this curious performance.
Every morning like that?
Idaho asked.
Only if you wish it.
Idaho sampled the drink, mélange coffee. He recognized the fruit, the soft Caladan melon called Paradan.
My favorite.
You know me pretty well, Idaho said. Moneo smiled.
We've had some practice. Now, about your question.
And Leto's curious theory.
Yes. He says that the all-male army was too dangerous to its civilian support base.
That's crazy. Without the army, there would have been no...
I know the argument. But he says that the male army was a survival of the screening function delegated to the non-breeding males in the prehistoric pack. He says it was a curiously consistent fact that it was always the older males who sent the younger males into battle.
What does that mean, screening function?
The ones who were always out on the dangerous perimeter, protecting the core of breeding males, females, and the young. The ones who first encountered the predator.
How is that dangerous to the civilians? Idaho took a bite of the melon, found it ripened perfectly.
The Lord Leto says that when it was denied an external enemy, the all-male army always turned against its own population. Always.
Contending for the females?
Perhaps. He obviously does not believe, however, that it was that simple.
I don't find this a curious theory.
You have not heard all of it.
There's more?
Oh, yes. He says that the all-male army has a strong tendency toward homosexual activities.
Idaho glared across the table at Moneo.
I never...
Of course not. He is speaking about sublimation, about deflected energies and all the rest of it.
The rest of what? Idaho was prickly with anger at what he saw as an attack on his male self-image.
Adolescent attitudes, just boys together, jokes designed purely to cause pain, loyalty only to your pack mates, things of that nature.
Idaho spoke coldly. What's your opinion?
I remind myself,
Moneo turned and spoke while looking out at the view,
of something which he has said and which I am sure is true. He is every soldier in human history. He offered to parade for me a series of examples, famous military figures who were frozen in adolescence. I declined the offer. I have read my history with care and have recognized this characteristic for myself.
Moneo turned and looked directly into Idaho's eyes.
Think about it, Commander.
Idaho prided himself on self-honesty, and this hit him. Cults of youth and adolescence preserved in the military. It had the ring of truth. There were examples in his own experience. Moneo nodded.
The homosexual, latent or otherwise, who maintains that condition for reasons which could be called purely psychological, tends to indulge in pain-causing behavior, seeking it for himself and inflicting it upon others. Lord Leto says this goes back to the testing behaviour in the prehistoric pack.
You believe him?
I do.
Idaho took a bite of the melon. It had lost its sweet savour. He swallowed and put down his spoon.
I will have to think about this, Idaho said.
Of course.
You're not eating, Idaho said.
I was up before dawn and ate then.
Moneo gestured at his plate.
The women continually try to tempt me.
Do they ever succeed?
Occasionally.
You're right. I find his theory curious. Is there more to it?
Oh, he says that when it breaks out of the adolescent homosexual restraints, the male army is essentially rapist. Rape is often murderous, and that's not survival behavior.
Idaho scowled. A tight smile flitted across Moneo's mouth.
Lord Leto says that only Atreides' discipline and moral restraints prevented some of the worst excesses in your times.
A deep sigh shook Idaho. Moneo sat back, thinking of a thing the God Emperor had once said. No matter how much we ask after the truth, self-awareness is often unpleasant. We do not feel kindly toward the truth-sayer.
Those damned Atreides, Idaho said.
I am Atreides, Moneo said.
What?
Idaho was shocked.
His breeding program, Moneo said. I'm sure that Leilaxu mentioned it. I am directly descended from the mating of his sister and Harkaladar.
Idaho leaned toward him.
Don't tell me, Atreides. How are women better soldiers than men?
They find it easier to mature.
Idaho shook his head in bewilderment.
They have a compelling physical way of moving from adolescence into maturity, Moneo said. As Lord Leto says, carry a baby in you for 9 months, and that changes you.
Idaho sat back.
What does he know about it?
Moneo merely stared at him until Idaho recalled the multitude in Leto, both male and female. The realization plunged over Idaho. Moneo saw it, recalling a comment of the God Emperor's.
Your words brand him with a look you want him to have.
As the silence continued, Moneo cleared his throat. Presently he said,
The immensity of the Lord Leto's memories has been known to stop my tongue too.
Is he being honest with us?
Idaho asked.
I believe him.
But he does so many... I mean, take this breeding program. How long has that been going on?
From the very first. From the day he took it away from the Bene Gesserit.
What does he want from it?
I wish I knew.
But you're...
An Atreides and his chief aide, yes.
You haven't convinced me that a female army is best.
They continue the species?
At last, Idaho's frustration and anger had an object.
Is that what I was doing with them that first night? Breeding?
Possibly. The fish speakers take no precautions against pregnancy.
Damn him! I'm not some animal he can move from stall to stall
Like a stud?
Yes.
But the Lord Leto refuses to follow the Tleilaxu pattern of gene surgery and artificial insemination.
What have the Tleilaxu got to...
They are the object lesson. Even I can see that. Their face dancers are mules, closer to a colony organism than to human.
Those others of... me. Were any of them his studs?
Some. You have descendants.
Who?
I am one.
Idaho stared into Moneo's eyes, lost suddenly in a tangle of relationships. Idaho found the relationships impossible to understand. Moneo obviously was so much older than...
But I am...
Which of them was truly the older? Which the ancestor and which the descendant?
I sometimes have trouble with this myself,
Moneo said.
If it helps... The Lord Leto assures me that you are not my descendant, not in any ordinary sense. However, you may well father some of my descendants.
Idaho shook his head from side to side.
Sometimes I think only the God Emperor himself can understand these things,
Moneo said.
That's another thing, Idaho said. This god business.
The Lord Leto says he has created a holy obscenity.
This was not the response Idaho had expected.
What did I expect? A defense of the Lord Leto?
Holy obscenity,
Moneo repeated. The words rolled from his tongue with a strange sense of gloating in them. Idaho focused a probing stare on Moneo.
He hates his god emperor. No, he fears him. But don't we always hate what we fear?
Why do you believe in him? Idaho demanded.
You ask if I share in the popular religion?
No. Does he?
I think so.
Why? Why do you think so?
Because he says he wishes to create no more face dancers. He insists that his human stock, once it has been paired, breeds in the way it has always bred.
What the hell does that have to do with it?
You ask me what he believes in. I think he believes in chance. I think that's his god.
That's superstition.
Considering the circumstances of the empire, a very daring superstition.
Idaho glared at Moneo.
You damned Atreides, he muttered. You'll dare anything.
Moneo noted that there was dislike mixed with admiration in Idaho's voice.
The Duncans always begin that way.
What is the most profound difference between us? Between you and me? You already know it. It's these ancestral memories. Mine come at me in the full glare of awareness. Yours work from your blind side. Some call it instinct or fate. The memories apply their leverages to each of us, on what we think and what we do. You think you are immune to such influences. I am Galileo. I stand here and tell you, yet it moves. That which moves can exert its force in ways no mortal power ever before dared stem. I am here to dare this. The Stolen Journals.
When she was a child, she watched me, remember. When she thought I was not aware, Siona watched me like the desert hawk which circles above the lair of its prey. You yourself mentioned it.
Leto rolled his body a quarter turn on his cart while speaking. This brought his cowled face close to that of Moneo, who trotted beside the cart. It was barely dawn on the desert road which followed the high artificial ridge from the citadel in the Sarir to the festival city. The road from the desert ran laser beam straight until it reached this point, where it curved widely and dipped into terraced canyons before crossing the Idaho River. The air was full of thick mists from the river tumbling in its distant clamour, but Leto had opened the bubble cover which sealed the front of his cart. The moisture made his worm self tingle with vague distress. But there was the smell of sweet desert growth in the mist, and his human nostrils savoured it. He ordered the cortege to stop.
Why are we stopping, Lord?
Moneo asked. Leto did not answer. The cart creaked as he heaved his bulk into an arching curve, which lifted his head and allowed him to look across the forbidden forest to the Kynes Sea, glistening silver far off to the right. It turned left, and there were the remains of the shield wall, a sinuous low shadow in the morning light. The ridge here had been raised almost 2,000 meters to enclose the Sarir and limit airborne moisture there. From his vantage, Leto could see the distant notch where he had caused the festival city of On to be built.
It is a whim which stops me, Leto said.
Shouldn't we cross the bridge before resting?
Moneo asked.
I am not resting.
Leto stared ahead. After a series of switchbacks, which were visible from here only as a twisting shadow, the high road crossed the river on a fairy bridge, climbed to a buffer ridge and then sloped down to the city, which presented a vista of glittering spires at this distance.
The Duncan acts subdued, Leto said. Have you had your long conversation with him?
Precisely as you required, Lord.
Well, it's only been 4 days,
Leto said. They often take longer to recover.
He has been busy with your guard, Lord. They were out until late again last night.
The Duncans do not like to walk in the open. They think about the things which could be used to attack us.
I know, Lord.
Leto turned and looked squarely at Moneo. The Majordomo wore a green cloak over his white uniform. He stood beside the open bubble cover, exactly in the place where duty required that he station himself on these excursions. You are very dutiful, Moneo, Leto said.
Thank you, Lord.
Guards and courtiers kept themselves at a respectful distance, well behind the cart. Most of them were trying to avoid even the appearance of eavesdropping on Leto and Moneo. Not so Idaho. He had positioned some of the fish speaker guards at both sides of the royal road, spreading them out. Now he stood staring at the cart. Idaho wore a black uniform with white piping, a gift of the fish speakers, Moneo had said.
They like this one very much. He is good at what he does.
What does he do, Moneo?
Why, guard your person, Lord.
The women of the guard all wore skin-tight green uniforms, each with a red Atreides hawk at the left breast. They watch him very closely, Leto said.
Yes, he is teaching them hand signals. He says it's the Atreides way.
That is certainly correct. I wonder why the previous one didn't do that.
Lord, if you don't know—
I jest, Moneo. The previous Duncan did not feel threatened until it was too late. Has this one accepted our explanations?
So I'm told, Lord. He is well started in your service.
Why is he carrying only that knife in the belt sheath?
The women have convinced him that only the specially trained among them should have laser guns.
Your caution is groundless, Moneo. Tell the women that it's much too early for us to begin fearing this one.
As my lord commands.
It was obvious to Leto that his new guard commander did not enjoy the presence of the courtiers. He stood well away from them. Most of the courtiers, he had been told, were civil functionaries. They were decked out in their brightest and finest for this day when they could parade themselves in their full power and in the presence of the God Emperor. Leto could see how foolish the courtiers must appear to Idaho. But Leto could remember far more foolish finery, and he thought that this day's display might be an improvement. Have you introduced him to Siona? Leto asked. At the mention of Siona, Moneo's brows congealed into a scowl. Calm yourself, Leto said. Even when she spied on me, I cherished her.
I sense danger in her, Lord. I think sometimes she sees into my most secret thoughts.
The wise child knows her father.
I do not joke, Lord.
Yes, I can see that. Have you noticed that the Duncan grows impatient?
They scouted the road almost to the bridge,
Moneo said. What did they find?
The same thing I found. A new museum Fremen.
Another petition?
Do not be angry, Lord.
Once more Leto peered ahead. This necessary exposure to the open air, the long and stately journey with all of its ritual requirements to reassure the fish speakers, all of it troubled Leto. And now, another petition. Idaho strode forward to stop directly behind Moneo. There was a sense of menace about Idaho's movements. Surely not this soon, Leto thought.
Why are we stopping, my lord?
Idaho asked. I often stop here, Leto said. It was true. He turned and looked beyond the fairy bridge. The way twisted downward out of the canyon heights into the Forbidden Forest, and thence through fields beside the river. Leto had often stopped here to watch the sunrise. There was something about this morning, though, the sun striking across the familiar vista, something which stirred old memories. The fields of the royal plantations reached outward beyond the forest, and when the sun lifted over the far curve of land, it beamed glowing gold across grain rippling in the fields. The grain reminded Leto of sand, of sweeping dunes which once had marched across this very ground. And will march once more. The grain was not quite the bright silica amber of his remembered desert. Leto looked back at the cliff-enclosed distances of his sarir, his sanctuary of the past. The colours were distinctly different. All the same, when he looked once more toward Festival City, he felt an ache where his many hearts once more were reforming in their slow transformation toward something profoundly alien.
"What is it about this morning that makes me think about my lost humanity?"
Leto wondered. Of all the royal party looking at that familiar scene of grain fields and forest, Leto knew that only he still thought of the lush landscape as the Bar Belamar, the ocean without water.
"Duncan," Leto said, "you see that out there toward the city? That was the Tanzaruft."
"The land of terror?"
Idaho revealed his surprise in the quick look toward On and the sudden return of his gaze to Leto.
"The Bar Belamar," Leto said. "It has been concealed under a carpet of plants for more than 3,000 years. Of all who live on Arrakis today, only the two of us ever saw the desert original."
Idaho looked toward On.
"Where is the shield wall?" he asked.
"Muad'Dib's Gap is right there, right where we built the city."
"That line of little hills? That was the shield wall? What happened to it?"
"You are standing on it."
Idaho looked up at Leto, then down to the roadway and all around.
"Lord, shall we proceed?"
Moneo asked.
"Moneo, with that clock ticking in his breast, is the goad to duty," Leto thought.
There were important visitors to see and other vital matters. Time pressed him, and he did not like it when his god-emperor talked about old times with the Duncans. Leto was suddenly aware that he had paused here far longer than ever before. The courtiers and guards were cold after their run in the morning air. Some had chosen their clothing more for show than protection.
"Then again," Leto thought, "perhaps show is a form of protection."
"There were dunes," Idaho said.
"Stretching for thousands of kilometers," Leto agreed.
Moneo's thoughts churned. He was familiar with the God Emperor's reflexive mood, but there was a sense of sadness in it this day. Perhaps the recent death of a Duncan. Leto sometimes let important information drop when he was sad. You never questioned the God Emperor's moods or his whims, but sometimes they could be employed.
"Siona will have to be warned,"
Moneo thought,
"if the young fool will listen to me."
She was far more of a rebel than he had been. Far more. Leto had tamed his Moneo, sensitized him to the golden path and the rightful duties for which he had been bred, but methods used on a Moneo would not work with Siona. In his observation of this, Moneo had learned things about his own training which he had never before suspected.
"I don't see any identifiable landmarks," Idaho was saying.
"Right over there," Leto said, pointing, "where the forest ends. That was the way to Splintered Rock."
Moneo shut out their voices.
"It was ultimate fascination with the God Emperor which finally brought me to heal."
Leto never ceased to surprise and amaze. It could not be reliably predicted. Moneo glanced at the God Emperor's profile.
"What has he become?"
As part of his early duties, Moneo had studied the Citadel's private records, the historical accounts of Leto's transformation. But symbiosis with sand trout remained a mystery which even Leto's own words could not dispel. If the accounts were to be believed, the sand trout's skin made his body almost invulnerable to time and violence. The great body's ribbed core could even absorb laser gun bursts.
"First the sand trout, then the worm. All part of the great cycle which had produced Melange."
That cycle lay within the God Emperor, marking time.
"Let us proceed," Leto said.
Moneo realized that he had missed something. He came out of his reverie and looked at a smiling Duncan Idaho.
"We used to call that wool gathering," Leto said.
"I'm sorry, Lord,"
Moneo said. "I was—"
"You were wool gathering, but it's all right."
"His moods improved,"
Moneo thought.
"I can thank the Duncan for that, I think."
Leto adjusted his position on the cart, closed part of the bubble cover and left only his head free. The cart crunched over small rocks on the roadbed as Leto activated it. Idaho took up position at Moneo's shoulder and trotted along beside him. There are floater bulbs under that cart, but he uses the wheels, Idaho said.
Why is that? It pleases the Lord Leto to use wheels instead of anti-gravity.
What makes the thing go? How does he steer it?
Have you asked him?
I haven't had the opportunity.
The royal cart is of Ixion manufacture.
What does that mean?
It is said that the Lord Leto activates his cart and steers it just by thinking in a particular way.
Don't you know?
Questions such as this do not please him. Even to his intimates, Moneo thought, the God Emperor remains a mystery.
Moneo,
Leto called.
You had better return to your guards,
Moneo said, gesturing for Idaho to fall back.
I'd rather be out in front with them, Idaho said.
The Lord Leto does not want that. Now go back.
Moneo hurried to place himself close beside Leto's face, noting that Idaho was falling back through the courtiers to the rear ring of guards. Leto looked down at Moneo.
I thought you handled that very well, Moneo.
Thank you, Lord.
Do you know why the Duncan wants to be out in front?
Certainly, Lord. It's where the guard should be.
And this one senses danger.
I don't understand you, Lord. I cannot understand why you do these things.
That's true, Moneo.
The female sense of sharing originated as familial sharing, care of the young, the gathering and preparation of food, sharing joys, love, and sorrows. Funeral lamentation originated with women. Religion began as a female monopoly, wrested from them only after its social power became too